Good evening. You're listening to Skip Intro with Lee Chui Lin, Ian McNally, and Julian Yap. And of course, I mean, nobody's really talking about anything else this week. I think everyone's gearing up for Avengers Endgame. But in a little bit of counter-programming, we thought that we'd try and throw a lifeline to non-Marvel fans and take a look at a completely different kind of film. So who is in the friend zone? What is going on? What is this movie?
So The Friend Zone is a Thai movie. It's a romantic comedy, and it's about this two friends who, it starts, oddly enough, in like high school with the same actors in high school gear, and they look like they're in high school.
I thought that was where it was going to go, and No, that wasn't. It was a nice little surprise that it did start out in high school.
And it establishes this friendship between Gink and Pam, who are two friends who, through a traumatic family experience for Gink, Pam kind of declares his love for her, but not in a declaration way. It's kind of like, if this, something really bad happened, you know, but I'll always love you. And that triggers a look on her face, which is basically saying, what kind of love? And at that point, it's like, you know, it's awkward. They're teenagers. He just says, well, you know, we're friends. Friends don't leave each other. We'll always be there for each other. And that kind of sets in stone their relationship for the next 10 years.
That establishes that friend zone that we'll be sitting through for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
Right. And so with that next 2 hours, then, is there a lot of back and forth? Because when I hear the word friend zone or the phrase friend zone, it sounds, I mean, it has a lot of baggage, firstly. Yeah. But also it sounds a bit tiresome, like potentially, as if, you know, people are just waiting in the friend zone and the audience is just shrieking at the screen going like, okay, you love each other. We get it. Let's just finish this in 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's not got a good reputation, that idea of this artificial barrier that you can either get over or set on fire and leave. And the movie has a nice framing device after the initial setup, which is that four guys talking at a wedding where they're holding two beers. And I was wondering, why are they holding two beers?
Apparently it's a Thai custom.
Yeah, but refilling, they're holding the beer for their friend's own friend. You know, she's the one off having fun while he is off having fun while they go and get the beers for them. And I think that's a nice little, these four guys then get talking about their friend zones and how Pam has been in the one the longest, at 10 years. And it kind of jumps back and forth between different things that have happened in their lives and how he's always there for her. And it's also, helpfully, he works for a well-known airline that I don't think we want to give free advertising to. So he's able to fly anywhere she's actually having a problem, which is part of the problem. But the execution of all this is, I found it charming. Like, you build up their relationship, you find out all the things that are going on, and then, you know, the way they deal with the issue of the friend zone, it's not, you know, 500 Days of Summer, I think, is like one that kind of deals with it badly, where it's like, it's that kind of, she's not, they're both painted as fully rounded characters. She's a little bit more manic pixie dream girl, a little bit, or drama queen, but he's also got his problems. They're relatively realistic. The humor is quite good. And I thought that it dealt with I'm on the fence. I thought it dealt with the friend zone in a good way. It wasn't just like this barrier that had to be overcome.
So, Julian, I can't read your face.
My face
exactly.
is going through a journey as I'm reacting to Ian in real time.
Correct, correct. I think you started at affronted. So do you want to maybe take us through that?
Okay, well, get ready. Well, first of all, I hate this trope, this friend zone trope. We haven't seen it in a long time in Hollywood because, you know, it's bad. Audiences have voiced that it's bad. Hollywood decided, well, we can't make money out of it anymore, so maybe we should stop. And it's kind of, I wouldn't say that they did it badly. I think this film, you know, they explore it really well. It is extremely reductive of the entire trope. They do it. It's a very simplistic, one-dimensional portrayal of the trope. You know, you have one type of character falling in love with another type of character, and you know, they happen to be in this friend zone. The thing you were saying with the four male characters holding their two beers, discussing that friend zone thing, I thought those were insufferable scenes for me to get through. And I was surprised that you enjoyed it because it was four men lamenting about the fact that, oh no, all my friends don't love me. And I'm such a great guy. Why can't they love me?
And I expected that to be so much worse.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
It could have been worse. Yeah. So I think they did deal with that nicely. And there's some weird little humor, like them constantly shocked at things and spilling their beers.
The back and forth and the timing in those scenes, the choreography was super, that bit was super cool.
So can I just say that when I hear this, one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the fact that I feel as if here in Asia, there is a specific, and I shouldn't say Asia because that's very sweeping, but I think in different countries as well, generally speaking, our rom-coms have a different measure of what is creepy compared to Hollywood rom-coms.
For sure.
Yeah, because we come from different cultural backgrounds, and so there's a certain level of acceptance when it comes to things like pursuit. There's a certain level of okayness when it comes to people, I don't know, hanging outside your house. They're just simple things like that, that there's an assumption that the audience will find it romantic, whereas if you were to take it and transpose it to the West, it just comes off as creepy. Like a recent example, I think, was Tom Hiddleston doing an ad. Did you guys see it?
Oh, the Japanese ad with the cooking?
The Chinese ad,
Chinese.
It was Chinese. And it was filmed in like the vertical screen thing. And it was as if he was someone's partner, right, basically. And how it was mocked really soundly in like Hollywood land. But in China, there was like a groundswell of support for him and basically saying, no, it's not creepy. This is how women would like to be treated here. This is. And so I just wonder whether when we see a movie like Friendzone, whether it's possible to divorce the Hollywood rom-com expectation from the more Asian audience, like, well, this is kind of okay. This is what we want.
I think that they managed to sidestep some of that because Pam is not that guy who's hanging around her all the time holding her coat. There is elements of other characters who do that a little bit, but they're specifically cast to be odd-looking guys that they have in the rest of the friend zone group.
Which is in itself a problem.
Yeah, but hey, they got work. Yeah. And they're very talented as you watch them sing at the end credits. If
yes,
you stay
they
for
do,
the credits.
Yeah.
But he is there more as a help. Like, he is off doing other things with his life, but Gink is such a car crash sometimes that he has to fly in and not rescue her. He's not her knight in shining armor, but he is there to support whenever he can.
The problem is that he's trying as hard as he can, and he's using his miles to be that knight in shining armor, and it's not.
But it's only near. There is a point where it does change into maybe this could be something else. I thought that up until that point, it did feel like he wasn't pursuing her. It was like in the back of his mind, that wasn't the forefront, so it doesn't come off as a creepy thing.
Well, it's not just creepy, right? I think one of the things that makes the friend zone concept, not the movie, but the concept so toxic is the idea that everything that someone does for you is ultimately with, you know, pants getting into purpose.
Yeah, there's a reward in mind.
It's not there just because like, hey, we're friends and this is something that friends do for each other. So when I hear things like a guy flies somewhere else to save a girl and, you know, that's a big gesture, right? So do we get an understanding of the motivations in those instances?
I think they do because he works as an air host. So for him, it's not as big a deal as it would be.
I don't know.
No, but I mean, it is getting on a bus for him. So I didn't feel it come off as that kind of creepy. There is when the inevitable confrontation comes, I think the creepiness comes in there. And there's also, I don't know if it's a translation thing. There's a weird thing about like, if you keep doing this, I'll kiss you. It's like a weird threat. But the way it deals with a breakup with someone who is creepy but doesn't appear it is, I thought, was handled incredibly well because it's not the dramatic screaming, shouting, tantrum thing.
It was, yeah.
Which
it
is, was. So it's this weird balance. And like you talked about earlier, all the comedic timing in this movie is spot on.
Like this film is so slick. Yeah. I was so surprised how slick this film was. It is almost too shiny and too perfect, but in a not too annoying way. It's almost like an ad. And the film is self-aware enough that they actually poke fun of their own self, which you have to give them props for. It's cool to watch. Probably maybe as slick as Crazy Rich Asians was, in that you have this very shiny version of Singapore.
Shiny, pretty version.
Very shiny, right. Yeah. And they do that. They go through the different Southeast Asian countries, which is a little, I mean,
everywhere
gets
its airline code to expand into the title over a beautifully lit city.
Yeah. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Did you find it creepy, Julian? You didn't actually answer that.
Yes.
Okay. There we are. Okay, so we are talking about Friendzone. Let us know what you think of it. Let us know what you think of the whole concept of the Friendzone even. WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at SkipIntroMY. Up next, we're going to be talking about chick flicks. And also, I just have one more thing to get into regarding Asian rom-coms. So we'll do that after this. It's Skip Intro BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Hello, you are listening to Skip Intro with Lynn, Julian and Ian. Earlier we were talking about the new Thai movie, Friendzone, and how there seems to be a mutual agreement that it was an enjoyable, slick, funny film. Where the divide seems to be is on creep factor. So let us know what you think of that. But there's also been a whole discussion, I guess, or there is a discussion to be had about rom-coms in general and the whole notion of chick flicks. Before that, though, I just wanted to ask you guys, have you seen Kita Kita?
No.
So it's available on Netflix, and it is a Filipino film that is just based on the idea of two Filipinos in Japan. One of them goes through heartbreak, loses her sight, and then, you know, there's a friend nearby who just kind of keeps hanging around.
How convenient.
Right. Who keeps
hanging around
her house, and eventually is the one who kind of gets her to re-blossom into the world, and then things happen. Later on, you realize that there's a whole backstory. And the thing is, right, I didn't like it at all. I really thought that it was kind of creepy. and now I'm looking at it, and it has a 7.8 out of 10 on IMDb. Mm. And according to Google users, 89% like this film. So I just think that there is something to be said about the whole, about Asianness in rom-coms and how it's completely different, I think. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I mean, I was at a screening on a weekday at 9:30 p.m. and my hall was full and people were laughing their heads off at scenes that I didn't think were funny. And
little
I don't
monkeys.
Know. Yes.
There's
lots of monkeys in this. And I don't know if maybe that's a thing, that divide that I'm not reaching. But even looking online, you can see people love this film. The Google and IMDb rating for this is really high as well. I don't know. They do well here. People love
stalkers.
But there is a problem inherent in the cinema and in film with regards to capturing. They're very good at capturing the first flush of romance. Like, even if you get away from the stalker style of things, even just a movie where they're two normal people falling in love, it's all the first blush of romance. It's all the grand gestures and everything. It's not picking the kids up from school, because it's very hard to capture that. And I think that's a problem. That's not a problem with cinema. I think that's a problem with writers and storytellers. Like, necessity is the mother of all invention. And if you put limits on your story, like, around that, like, I think the Before Sunrise series shows this perfectly, how they show that love over the course from like first flush of romance to sitting together on a pier having an argument, but also knowing that you're going to be together forever.
Sure, but not everybody has the time or desire to do a Linklater film, right?
True.
Which is really the problem here. I mean, because I was thinking about the whole idea of chick flicks and the fact that when it comes to, I mean, firstly, we have to talk about the term, I guess, but also the fact that it ignores how sometimes something like Mean Girls, for example, can actually display a pretty nuanced understanding of lived experience. Like, sure, I mean, it's exaggerated and it's funny and, you know, it's written to be very sarky, but it does talk about social dynamics in a way that I think makes people who haven't experienced it uncomfortable, but people who have gone to high school and have had female friends, you know, may recognize some of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing is, most chick flicks are written, directed, led by women. You have people who, you know, have gone through these experiences. They're able to criticize them well enough that they can translate that properly in film. And you have, well, usually white men who do feel that because, you know, they're about women, they go through typical things that women do. And that's somehow not important. And it's not important to go through things that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And things like, I'm going to say Twilight, but things like Twilight, which is a perfectly okay film. And it gets blasted just because of what it is.
Yeah. Oh, there's a quote by a writer that crops up all the time. I wish I could remember what it was now. But they were talking about writing for specifics because it makes it more universal. It's like people think that you have to write this universal story that will work from Shanghai to San Diego. But actually, the more specific you write, the more that reach can be, because it turns out human experience can be a lot more universal than people think, but also the differences are what makes it entertaining to watch on screen.
And I think when it comes to the exact term chick flick, Ian, I think you saw something earlier this week.
Yeah, so at Netflix Film on Twitter decided to poke a hornet's nest because it's the internet, and they just poked a series of tweets. I'll just read through them quickly. First off, quick PSA, can we stop calling films chick flicks unless the films are literally about small baby chickens? Here's why this phrase should probably be retired. For starters, chick flicks are traditionally synonymous with romantic comedies. This suggests that women are the only people interested in one, romance, and two, comedy. Which I can promise from the men I've come across in my life simply isn't true. So I guess this is a woman writing it. These aren't sweeping categories specific to men. You don't hear people asking to watch man movies. Instead, pretty much every intersection of genre is based on the table, is on the table and seen as for men. Except, of course, the aforementioned rom-coms. So this obviously got, you know, garbage replies, but also some nice ones, like I think it was Chickens in Harlem, I think, is someone who actually just actually raises chickens and says, can we please make some chick flicks? But yeah, these terms came about because in the 80s, everyone wanted to sell and put everything in boxes. And it's like, well, you know exactly what this is. There's another article on The Guardian this week about an author who wrote about AI and an alternate Britain and got sniffy when someone called it science fiction. It's this idea that all these genres have their baggage with them. Whereas if you just Google chick flicks, the list you get at the top of the page on Google is 10 Things I Hate About You, Clueless, Crazy Stupid Love, He's Not That Into You, The Notebook, The Devil Wears Prada, Pretty Woman, oh, and Confessions of a Shopaholic, which is an Easy A. So Confessions of a Shopaholic and Easy A and Twilight, if you scroll over a bit, Twilight's there. Okay. But I love those Confessions of a Shopaholic and Easy A, and I like most of those movies. So
this is an incredible list. This is my Saturday night list, like that guilty, not even a guilty pleasure. They're just good, fun films to watch. And the fact that these are the things that you get when you Google chick flicks, it's so derivative of, it performs really well in the box office. It transcends age groups, demographic groups.
No, I was just going to leap in and say that I think one of the reasons why it performs well in the box office sometimes is because there is sometimes a lack of that sort of thing. There is a feeling sometimes of, oh, you made a movie for me? Yeah. It's for me? Yeah. Okay, great. But then again, it shouldn't be, you know, just for me. I think anybody can appreciate, like, it's the same as YA, right? Like, I mean, when we talk about young adult movies, they all function on very similar themes. It's all about self-actualization. It's about finding your crew. It's about, you know, becoming a person in this world. And similarly, rom-coms satisfy very specific things as well. They satisfy the need for just sharp comedy, for example. They satisfy the need of watching people drink wine and talk and bond with their friends. There are very specific pleasures intrinsic to rom-coms that aren't always about the big airport run at the end and the big kiss. You know, there are things beyond it that people tend to overlook, I think.
Yeah, so one of my favorite rom-coms is You've Got Mail, which is, you know, directed by Nora Ephron, very typically a chick flick, and especially in the 90s when chick flick was the term used for this kind of film. And there are so many warm, good moments that you don't get a lot in films these days, I find. It feels more organic as a film, that interaction, that chemistry between characters that you don't really get very often, because a lot of the times directors don't take the time to communicate with their actors that they want to put that warm feeling across. That I feel rom-coms, maybe they make it a little bit shiny at the end, but feels good to watch as an audience.
I think we should be clear that if we look at, for example, the overall filmography of someone like Gary Marshall, it's not been even. You know, you've got some really, really good ones, and then you've got some where that warmth is not earned.
Definitely.
You know, it's just like, hey, it's New Year's Eve. Let me just put some fireworks, and everybody just wants to watch the Empire State Building. And, you know,
Valentine's Day made so much money. Let's make another one.
Yeah, exactly. So I do think that there are problems with the rom-com thing where sometimes you go in, it's like horror movies, same problem. You expect to be scared, you expect to be warmed. And so when people give you roughly what it is that you thought you wanted, you're like, oh, okay. You know, but You've Got Mail is a good example because you need to care about these people.
You do.
There's a business at stake. There's a whole livelihood. There are just so many different things.
But what you were saying about the characters, to bring it a little back to Friend Zone again, I was won over slightly by those characters.
Their chemistry is great.
The chemistry is great. And they're, like you said, they're lit so beautifully that I couldn't help but be swept along with this and over any potholes that would appear in the story or the politics of it. And it warmed the cockles of my heart.
So you'd recommend people see it?
I think it's interesting to see. Good to see.
Yeah, I wouldn't tell anyone not to watch it. I mean, I didn't enjoy it, but everyone in my hall, they loved it.
We've been talking about Friend Zone, rom-coms, chick flicks. Let us know what you think about. Let us know your favorite rom-coms, actually. Let us know whether you think the term chick flick needs to be retired. Again, you can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. And you can find us on social media. We're Skip Intro MY. That's on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, just anywhere that you would expect. And by the way, drop us a line, movies@bfm.my. We are waiting for your emails. This is Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.